welcome to episode 9 of Positively Geared. My name is Alex Augustiniak, and in today's episode, we discuss with Lloyd Edge the importance of using a buyer's agent. Lloyd Edge is the founder and director of Oz Property Professionals, a very successful buyer's agent firm in Sydney, Australia. In this episode, he dissects the importance of having a buyer's agent as part of your team and the roles they can play in ensuring that you successfully build a portfolio of properties. Hi, Lloyd.
Hi, Alex. How are you going?
I'm well, thank you. Today on this episode, we're going to be discussing buyer's agents. Most people are aware that you're the author of the book Positively Geared by now, but you also run a buyer's agency firm.
That's correct. Oz Property Professionals.
So tell me about why buyer's agents are important in the market today.
It's really important to have a buyer's agent on your side as a buyer. What people don't realize is that when you're selling a property, everybody actually has a real estate agent representing you. But when you're buying a property, people don't have that same representation. So it's very one-sided. So having a buyer's agent representing your best interests are actually very important.
Reflecting upon when you started your portfolio and the lack of experience and possibly guidance that you had at the time, was that one of the drivers behind wanting to start up your own advisory?
Absolutely. So when I first started, I basically had no strategy in place. I didn't really know what I was doing. I went it alone for the first few properties, really. And then when I did engage a buyer's agent to assist me, he actually helped me buy a property in pretty much the wrong location, which I found out later on. That all prompted me to want to open my own business to be able to actually help people not just buy a property, but educate them on the market and what makes a good property, what makes a bad property, and also help people achieve their dreams in a similar way that I have. So setting people strategies and allowing them to actually move forward from where they are now to where they'd like to be in the future.
In terms of the service that you provide, Lloyd, how does that approach differ to the conventional buyer's agent method? I think for me, one of the standout points would be that you have built such a strong portfolio of property. So you've got that firsthand experience, which would, you know, quite possibly put you in a very unique position in that industry already.
I think one of the main things to ask a buyer's agent whenever you're approaching someone for help is to ask them what sort of skin they've got in the game, how many properties they have, what sort of portfolio they have. That's really important within itself, because you don't want to be asking someone for help that if they've never invested themselves. It's a bit like asking someone to go and fix your car, a mechanic who's never actually fixed a car. So, you know, it's the same kind of thing. So you've got to be careful of that. The other thing also is that I have a diverse range of properties in my portfolio. So we're talking about apartments, houses, duplexes in different locations across different states, in capital cities and in regional areas, and with the different types of scenarios, which includes properties that, you know, you renovate, you subdivide, and all those strategies help me to achieve those long-term goals. So for me, it's not just about buying a property for a client as a transaction, but it's really about looking at their long-term goals and how we can really help people get there over that long term. Many of my clients are long-term clients who may buy 5, 6, 7 properties with us as they're working towards those long-term goals. So it's definitely not just one transaction. It's about that overall picture.
Having long-term clients, Lloyd, I think is a testament to the business that you've grown, because we are in a very transactional industry where typically, you know, you might do one or two deals within the lifespan of the customer lifespan. To see that you've got clients that come back after 6 to 7 years, you know, tells me that you're definitely on the right path and providing a high level of service.
Yeah, I think it's very important, and it's very important to really build relationships. So I think building trust and relationships with people and understanding what they're trying to achieve is what's really important. And then, you know, earning money and things like that kind of comes second. That's what comes next. But really looking after people is what's important, and understanding where they want to get to. And when you've got people who are sort of unhappy where they are in the current situation, they're working out how they're going to be able to afford to pay off their mortgage or be able to put their kids through schools and all those sort of situations, or they might only have 30 or 40K to invest in property and they want to build a portfolio. Those are the sort of strategies that I can help people with. And I feel it really, really rewarding being able to see people achieve those goals.
Lloyd, for people listening today to this podcast that are possibly exploring using a buyer's agent for the first time, what are generally some of the reasons that you would propose to a client that they would benefit from your service?
One of the main reasons that people come to me is they either lack the time or they lack the knowledge or both. And people are also, they feel very unsure about the process. They're not confident about negotiating on property or bidding at auction. They might feel unmotivated because they've been looking for a long time and haven't got anywhere. Quite often, you know, if you don't live near where you want to buy, then you need to find an expert in that who can help you invest in that area, because it's definitely not a good thing to be trying to buy in just near where you live, because that's not necessarily going to be the best area to invest in. You may even feel frustrated because real estate agents keep presenting you with the wrong properties to buy. Often people are worried about paying too much, or you might be missing out on auctions. So there's plenty of reasons there to use a buyer's agent. And then obviously finding the right types of properties in the right locations, in terms of, are they close to amenities? Do they have good floor plans? Do they help with your overall investment strategy?
I think reflecting upon a lot of the conversation we've had on and off the air, part of your success was, as you mentioned, finding the right place to invest your money into. And for me, I think of all the reasons you've just cited, that's probably one of the biggest advantages for your services, Lloyd, having that experience, which not all buyer's agents have, you know, having built a portfolio and being able to recommend to clients where to put that money. And it quite often won't necessarily be on your front doorstep or down the road either.
Yeah, absolutely, Alex, that's correct.
If we were to break down the buying process, what should somebody expect from a buyer's agent?
So from a good buyer's agent, you really should be looking at the first thing would be strategy. So quite often, for example, clients will come to me and they say they want to buy a property in a certain location. I'll actually say, why do you want to buy in that location? For me, I'll actually challenge them and I'll actually suggest to them where they want to buy based on their goals. So it's really about strategy. So strategy would be the first thing that we look at. Then we look at finance. That's where we would involve the broker. Then we would involve the accountant to look at the types of entities and any tax issues that come into the equation as well. All of those before we even look at purchasing the property or even sourcing the property, and we'll even involve a solicitor at this stage for the initial discussion. Then when it comes to actually sourcing the properties, buyer's agents get a lot of properties off market as well as those that are on market. Now, sometimes people get very excited about properties that are off market. What people need to understand is that buyer's agents have access to every property that's on the market. So that can be properties that are listed on the market, properties that are for off-market transactions, and also pre-market transactions. But because of our relationships with real estate agents, we can get good off-market transactions that can provide good negotiations and good solutions to the clients if those properties actually suit the clients. But quite often it may be ones that are actually listed for sale that might suit the client as well. So they're the ones that would pursue, but then would be working hard with negotiating good terms and good conditions. Building in pest inspections done on the property and facilitating the whole process through to settlement. So there's a lot of things that we manage in that purchase. And that includes, if it's an investment property, finding tenants in the property and stuff as well.
Just going back to what you said in that last sentence, let's talk about the relationship between estate agents being a seller's agent and a buyer's agent. And what do you believe that a buyer's agent can do with an estate agent compared to a buyer that's just walking through an open home on a Saturday?
Yeah, so buyer's agents develop really good relationships with real estate agents, so that we actually do know all the real estate agents in the areas that we service. So I get calls almost every day from real estate agents who have got properties that they've just listed, or they haven't even listed yet, but they've just signed up. Those sort of relationships are quite integral. They're the sort of things that, you know, the everyday buyer who goes to a Saturday open home inspection isn't going to get access to. So that's very important. The other thing also is understanding the real price guide. So one of the things that as a buyer's agent, we do is we really know what a property, the true value of a property is, because we know the area, we know what the comparable sales are, and we know what the market's doing. But the other thing we find with our relationship with real estate agents is that they usually give us a clearer indication of what they believe a property will sell for, as opposed to what they might tell to the buyer. Because quite often the buyer will be told one sort of price guide, and then the buyer's agent will be actually told something that's maybe a little bit more realistic. So it's because of those sort of relationships. And that does help facilitate some good transactions for our clients.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the relationship between a buyer's agent and a seller's agent is very much that it's more of a commercial based relationship. Whereas when a buyer's walking through the door of an open home for the first time, there is, you know, a lot of wishy-washiness that they sometimes need to cut through in terms of understanding what the true value of the home is or where it likely sits. Whereas you have the ability to go in, you've already got an existing relationship with the particular estate agent. They're going to probably be a lot more inclined to have a real frank conversation with you around value, and even possibly, you know, warming up closer to an auction where the owner's expectations are at, and what needs to be done on the day to secure the property.
Yeah, that's very true. The other thing also is that one of the things that I do as a buyer's agent is try to get an understanding of why a vendor is selling the property. And that is something that if you've got a good relationship with the real estate agent, you can usually get a pretty good understanding of that, where the everyday person going through the open home on Saturday may not necessarily get told that. Sometimes they will, because there's, you know, there's a lot of real estate agents out there who will be quite open with the potential buyers, but that's not necessarily always the case. The other thing that real estate agents really like is that buyer's agents have pre-approved clients. So we qualify our clients. And what that means is that before we go shopping in inverted commas, before we go and source properties for our clients, we make sure that they're pre-approved with finance. And real estate agents know that. So they know that there's less of a chance of a sale falling through if they're using a buyer's agent than if it's just the everyday person. So it does make the prospect stronger going through a buyer's agent. So there's a lot of advantages to the buyer going through a buyer's agent, because you can get some priorities that way.
One of the biggest barriers to entry, I think, for a lot of buyers that have been on the fence, in my experience, about appointing a buyer's agent is the possible fees associated with that. Obviously, we're not going to go in today into the nuts and bolts of that, but would it be fair to say, Lloyd, that the service is very much covered for on the basis that being able to buy for the best price could possibly save you $50,000 to $100,000, as opposed to, you know, a small fee associated with appointing a buyer's agent?
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. And one of the other things that that we do at Aus Property Professionals is that we have a flat fee. So there are some buyer's agents that charge a commission based on the purchase price. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but that can be a perceived conflict of interest, whereas we have a flat fee. So regardless of the purchase price, our fee remains the same. So it is actually in our best interest to actually negotiate the lowest price for the client, because there's no incentive for us to negotiate a higher price because our fee remains the same. So we're nice and transparent with that. It is quite often the case that we do negotiate a lot more than our fee off the price of a property. But in a very hot market, that's not necessarily always possible either. But what's really important that people need to understand is that a buyer's agent will help you buy the right property at the right price and will never let you overpay for a property. And that's really important, because quite often, if you don't have a true understanding of what the market value is at the time, you may end up paying $50,000 more than what you should for a property. And even when it comes to bidding at auction, we'll have a really good understanding of what the actual potential selling price will be, which usually has nothing to do with what the agent's price guide is. So there's a lot of value that we can add around that.
I think one of the biggest takeaways there, Lloyd, is just in terms of, once again, reverting back to the possible savings when working with a buyer's agent or somebody that's looking to appoint your services. We look at an auction environment where typically auctions will be bidding in at least $10,000 to $20,000 increments when they generally start. As the auction progresses, we do see the bids sort of start to lower in terms of the actual dollar quantity. As we get closer to sort of meeting reserve or effecting a sale. So, I mean, having the ability to work with somebody like yourself that can read the room, And also having that knowledge that because bids do increase so rapidly, you know, there's definitely a saving there, even if it's not necessarily tangible or immediate to the client at that point in time.
Absolutely, Alex. There's a few other things I could add to that as well. But one of them also is, so I've got about a 95% success rate at auctions. That's not because I'm amazing at bidding at auctions or anything like that. But what it does mean is that I've got a true understanding of what a property's value is. So I've had numerous clients come to me who've maybe been looking at properties for the last year or two, and they keep missing out on auction. And they keep thinking that they keep saying that things are going way above their budget. But I have to give them a bit of a reality check and let them know that they're looking at the wrong properties. If they've got a budget of $1 million, for example, and then they go and start bidding at auctions where the price guide is $1 million, then they're looking at the wrong properties, because those properties are usually going to go for a lot more than that. So I give them a bit of a reality check and say, well, you should be looking at this property over here. It's got a price guide of $800,000, but if you look at the comparables, it's probably going to sell for about $950. That's going to fit within your budget. And I'm usually correct like that. So it's about getting a true understanding of comparables and what the property is actually worth, as opposed to what the agent's price guide is around that. So that's really important within itself. And of course, like you were saying before, in terms of my bidding tactics, I like to control the scene at auctions as well. So I like to put in sort of the first bid and put in quite a low bid, and then I sort of control those increments. And quite often I have a few games during the auction. I've even had auctioneers get a bit lost at times, because once we get to the higher prices and the increments go smaller, where we might be at only $500 increments or something like that, and then I might put in a bid that might be $375 higher or something, and some auctioneers don't accept that, but others do. But I've had people get lost because it's just like, oh, where are we up to now? So, but it keeps people on their toes. But it does also, I try to keep a poker face, because it also means that other people at the auction don't really understand or don't know whether I've actually got a limit or what our limit is. So that's a bit of a tactic too. And I like to also be sort of front and center, so I look like I mean business, and I've always got my client next to me as well.
I always think auctions are a very interesting process, because they're almost a case study of human behavior. I've been to many an auction where I've seen, throwing the bids off in terms of the increments, which just sort of puts everybody into a bit of a head spin, including the auctioneer, like you mentioned. One of the biggest, I think, advantages, based on what you've said, that I've seen many, many times in real life myself, is where your presence that you bring as a buyer's agent, but also keeping a poker face on, almost gets the underbidder at the time, assuming you're successful at the auction, which you are quite frequently. It sort of possibly at times, that's where money's saved too, because what happens is they start to think, you know what, this Lloyd's just going to keep going and going and going, so we might as well bow out now. And that in itself is another saving, just from being able to do that at auction.
Yeah, and it's really true, Alex. That's actually happened a number of times. And I've even had the auctioneer at times say to me, this guy's got a limit, we just need to find out where that limit is. And I've actually had other people kind of stop, because they don't know where we're going to stop. And there's been times where we might have actually been only $5,000 from our maximum limit, and we're just increasing our amount by like $500 each time. But I could just tell that the other people that we're bidding against were just exceeding the limit. One of our tricks, I mean, if we've got, a limit of, say, $1.4 million, for example, on a property, we make sure that we've got a slightly higher budget than that, because I've been to auctions where other people, there might be a price guide of 1.2, 1.3. So people sort of turn up with those round numbers, be pre-approved for 1.4. So it gets to 1.4 and they know they can't bid any higher. We have approval for, say, 1.42, for example. So we've got just that little bit more to go. So everyone drops out at 1.4. I've still got 5 or 10K in the tank with my client, and it makes all the difference. So it's those little extra things that makes that difference. And mind you, these are on properties that may have actually been quoted as a price guide for being much less than that. So it's getting a true understanding of that, and then having those auction tactics in place.
So a lot of these concepts you do cover off in your book, Positively Geared. I want to talk to you about whether to purchase before or at auction. Do you have a preference, Lloyd, generally speaking? I know it's typically on a case-by-case basis. Auction is considered probably the most transparent way to buy a property, because you are seeing your competition. What are your thoughts on that?
I personally, to be honest, like both ways. Now, from our client's perspective and working for the client as the buyer, we do try to purchase our the properties before auction. So we do try to negotiate off the market before auction. But what that does mean that we, and I do need to educate our clients to be, that we need to actually put in a pretty strong offer. We can't be going in with a low offer thinking that they're going to negotiate, because if they're going to be interested in selling it to us before auction, it needs to be a pretty strong offer. Otherwise, they'll need to take it to auction. And it's also a matter of understanding what the vendor really wants, because sometimes the vendor just wants to take it to auction. It depends. If the market's really strong, then quite often people want to take it to the auction anyway just to test the market, because that's where they feel they'll get the most. Of course, it comes down to the amount of interest in the property. If they accept an offer from me, then the real estate agent will usually make sure that everybody else who's got interest in the property will also have the chance to put in an offer as well. And usually don't have much more, you know, maybe you get a chance to put one more offer in, but you don't get too much negotiation. You sort of put in your offer and they may accept it or not. I do like the auction process because, as you say, it is very transparent, and it does give people a real idea of what the actual property is worth. And while some people think that if you go to auction, prices can get carried away and get high, it really is just market value. It's what the properties sell for what they're worth on the day and what the market pays for it. And I do like auctions from that perspective.
I suppose that's a segue into my next question, Lloyd, which is obviously your role is to allow purchasers in your clientele base to buy property, to secure a home for the best price, and to remove the need to spend a dollar more than they have to. I guess another byproduct of that is that you also advise people on the right places to invest their money into. You mentioned before auctions, you know, effectively establish market value in the home. How do you go about advising clients where they're obviously trying to purchase for the best price possible? However, there always will be instances, particularly in markets like Sydney and Melbourne, where supply has been very low the past few years. There's heightened demand. We haven't seen supply really in the past 3 years, in my view, level out with where demand is, and therefore we're generally seeing that it is more favourable as a seller at the moment. Is it hard to educate clients on that final decision process as to, look, if this is the property that you want to buy and secure, you know, you're going to expect that we're going to have to pay close to market, or we're effectively going to have to be, you know, the highest bidder on auction day to secure the home?
Yes. So there's a couple of things there, I guess. But if you're an investor, then buying in some of those locations, particularly in Sydney, is probably not necessarily the right time to be doing that, or the right place to be doing that. So we might look at some other markets because if we can get into a market that maybe isn't such a fast growth pace at this stage and things, that might really help. Getting into a market where there's a scarcity, and we're seeing that in Sydney at the moment, there's a scarcity of properties being listed. Vendors are still sort of holding off, thinking that the market's really growing. If I hold off now, I'll be able to get more from a property later on. They're thinking that last year. Now they're probably thinking, if I hold off till spring, I can get more from my property then. So that places a bit of an issue there. But If we do sort of look at investing in those suburbs, because that's what the client really wants to do, then we do look at that long-term time frame. So we do look at what sort of growth we should get in that property over the next 10 years, and then look at, you know, is that worth it? And the answer is usually yes. So we don't just look at, what if we pay $50,000 more for this property now? We really look at what it's going to be worth in 10 years' time. And if you pay $50,000 more now than what you feel you should, but the property doubles in value in 10 years' time, then it's actually still a good investment, because you could buy in another location, another city, and it won't get anywhere near that much growth. Even if you're paying a little bit less now, you won't get that much growth. So this still works out as a better investment. If you're buying a home, because as a buyer's agent, we help people find their own occupied properties as well, then that's a little bit more emotional, and people need to understand if they're wanting to buy a home in the location that they're choosing, in a hot market, they're going to have to pay maximum price at auction to secure it. But it's just a matter of finding the right property, the perfect property for them.
So Lloyd, looking back at your buyer's agency work in a broader sense, do you have a recent case study on a client that was looking to invest possibly in the wrong location or just didn't quite know what they were doing, where you've been able to successfully assist them?
Yes, I do, Alex. Actually, I have got someone who was probably looking for about 2.5 years before they came to us, and then after they came to us, they probably within about 2.5 months found a property.
So when you first met with them, what were some of their fears and concerns around A, possibly working with a buyer's agent, and B, the overall process? And how did you manage to deal with those issues?
I think in terms of working with a buyer's agent, they actually hadn't ever heard of a buyer's agent before, other than being recommended to one. And then they'd just done a bit of research on us and came to us. So they needed to find out a lot more about what we did and how we could assist with the process. But one of their biggest concerns was that they had been looking for property for 2.5 years and just simply couldn't find something within their budget. So that was certainly something that I could address very quickly with them.
Walk me through where they were looking to buy and what ended up materializing.
Okay, so they were looking to buy in the eastern suburbs, and that was one of the, when they said they couldn't afford to buy within their budget, I immediately knew that we could find a better solution for them. So in this case, they were actually looking for a home to live in, and they really wanted to live in the eastern suburbs, but their budget just didn't permit that. So I really had to educate them on the market, because what they were doing is they were continuously missing out on auctions. They were also probably being misguided a bit by real estate agents, and on some occasions had been gazumped and everything like that. I educated them on some of the other markets in Sydney where prices were a bit more affordable, but you could also get more for your money. So rather than looking at a two-bedroom apartment in some of the areas like Rose Bay and Double Bay, we looked at some western, southwestern suburbs and also down in the St. George Shire and the Sutherland Shire, and looked at what you can actually get down there for your money.
And initially, was there a bit of pushback given that they were very fixated on that area? I mean, 2 years is quite a long time to be looking in a certain geographical market.
Well, that's correct, yeah. And they really had been looking in that same area that whole time. And they really had been fixated on that. There was a little bit of pushback there because while they were looking for a home to live in, they also wanted an investment at the same time. And that's always hard to be trying to have a home and investment as the one property because it's really one or the other. But it kind of is possible, especially in a market like Sydney, that you can buy a home to live in that's also well located to make a good investment, which is something that that we can look at for clients. But they were fixated that the eastern suburbs was going to be the best investment area for them, and that's not necessarily fundamentally it's not really necessarily correct either, because one of the more expensive markets there can also get some fairly high price declines when the market's go backwards at the end of the cycle. So there's certainly some other options really open to them. And once we looked at the land sizes and the types of properties that they can get for the money, down south in places like Miranda and Gymea, then they really started to really open their mind up more.
When working with those clients or I suppose assessing a wide array of people that you've dealt with, what do you find are generally the main drivers behind what makes them get fixated on a certain area?
It's mainly what family and friends say to them and what they've grown up believing, really. And property is a funny thing. Property is one of those things that everyone's got an opinion on. So you can go to your Sunday afternoon barbecues and people are always going to be talking about property. Even people who don't own any property seem to always have an opinion on property. Everyone's got an opinion on it there, and people seem to believe that more than actually listening to the experts a lot of the time. So that was definitely a driver there. These clients had actually grown up. I think one of them, I think the wife had grown up in the Lower North Shore, and the other had grown up in the eastern suburbs. So they were sort of around that kind of area. So I just needed to open their minds up more. But it was also a matter of really presenting them the options, which included a lot of data on sales comparables and the types of properties, the growth rates, because they did want a property that they believed that they would understand would get some growth in years to come and everything as well as something to live in, because I guess they wanted to get some growth so they could leverage off that to buy another property in the future. And I understood that because the very first property I ever bought, which is a little one-bedroom apartment in Rockdale, I actually lived in that. And then it became a great investment property for me, which I've refinanced probably 4 or 5 times over the years. So I did understand the fact that living in a property to have as an investment in the future is doable. So I did understand that aspect that these clients were trying to achieve.
And I suppose too, Lloyd, for some of the more owner occupiers or hybrid buyers, we'll use that term in the sense that they're wanting a place to live in, but they also want something that will possibly, you know, achieve superior capital growth over the next 5 to 10 years, however long that tenure is. Sometimes would you agree that, you know, you need that stepping stone property? So if they're determined that they want to be in the eastern suburbs, for example, they might have to purchase, for example, in an area you've suggested, to then allow themselves, I suppose, a bit of time to then be able to afford to buy in that area. And I suppose the property they've purchased could become a suitable investment.
Absolutely, yes. And where they have purchased is actually growing a lot, and they'll be able to leverage off that. So, yeah, getting some capital growth there, looking for ways that they can actually add value to that property that will get them into their dream home one day. But what's more ideal about that is that their dream home doesn't have to be that two-bedroom apartment. They were fixated on wanting to live in the eastern suburbs, but they're looking at really old, smallish Art Deco type two-bedroom apartments, when really if they look at really building up a portfolio, which they're now keen to do, they could actually look at getting a dream home, which might be a nice house, maybe close to the water, in the eastern suburbs, if that's where they really want to live. For me, that's how I built up my portfolio. I started with a one-bedroom unit. I then had a three-bedroom villa. I then bought a house near the city, now into our dream home, which is a six-bedroom property on the water. So I built up towards my dream home that way through investing. And I think these clients are going to be able to do the same, and I'll be able to help them to achieve something more than just that initial two-bedroom apartment they wanted.
So Lloyd, we've discussed quite intimately many of the benefits for mum and dad investors to use your services or to align themselves with a buyer's agent. Is it true that you also do a lot of work with more business-oriented individuals, for example, brokers, solicitors, accountants?
Yes, absolutely, Alex.
Why is it important, Lloyd, for any of those professionals listening to this series or podcast today to align themselves with a high-caliber buyer's agent like yourself?
Yeah, well, I think those professionals, so solicitors, really just they involve themselves in the contract negotiations, the conveyancing. The brokers do sort of just the finance. What we do is the overall strategy. So if solicitors and accountants and brokers are aligning themselves with a high quality buyer's agents, then they're really looking at that long-term wealth, because what we do is we're building long-term wealth for our clients, and I think that's really important.
I think you make a really good point, Lloyd, and it's really important that a lot of the clients that you're working with are repeat customers and referral-based customers. So if you are a professional working, closely with what you do, it's really important to align yourself with somebody like yourself, in the sense that you're gonna find that you'll also be able to build those long-term relationships with those customers. And generally speaking, as you mentioned, strategy is where you spend most of your time, and you're able to fill in a lot of the gaps that perhaps those individuals can't do, individually amongst each other.
Yes, absolutely, Alex. And most of our clients, many of our clients, are repeat clients and come from referrals. Having a team around our clients is really important, and that's really important to the clients. So I think it's really important for solicitors and brokers and any of those professionals in those various spaces to involve themselves with a good buyer's agent, because they really will then be looking at servicing their clients over a long period of time.
Lloyd, what are some of the not so obvious services that your firm provides with customers with?
I guess one of the things we've talked about, sort of what we do, is providing that full service and everything related to buying the property. What we can do is also just assist in different stages of the process. So sometimes a client might come to us having found a property, and they just want us to do the due diligence on the property. Or sometimes they found a property and they just want us to negotiate on the property, or maybe just turn up at auction, not do anything else, but just bid at auction. So sometimes people are worried about, can they afford a buyer's agent? Should they pay for a buyer's agent? But quite often people may have found their own property and they just want us to do some part of that process. So we can tailor anything to suit whatever people are looking for.
I think that's a really important point, because it really goes to show that you can't afford not to appoint or work with a buyer's agent to some capacity when looking to purchase.
Absolutely, yep.
If we can use this opportunity as a real-life case study of what that initial conversation looks like when you're meeting somebody for the first time, particularly, I know you cover off in your book, Positively Geared, people being unsure of their investment goals, and you do spend some time working with them on that. Also, in part, you know, what's their why? What are they trying to do? What's the end goal look like? What does that initial conversation look like, and what information are you trying to dig out of the client?
The first thing really is what they're trying to achieve over the long term. That's really important. Where do they want to be next 5, 10, 15 years? And that really comes down to financial independence and lifestyle goals. Now, financial independence or financial freedom means different things to different people. So that may mean paying off your home mortgage. It might mean retirement, or it might mean working part-time. It might mean having one partner staying at home looking after the kids. It might mean being able to put your kids through private schools or being able to afford to go on a family holiday. So it's different things for different people. But what I try to do is get a real understanding of what you're trying to achieve. And that'll be the question, very first question. And then we start looking at the strategy on how you can actually achieve those goals.
So Lloyd, you've met with somebody for the first time. They're obviously conscious of an end goal, which is financial freedom, or it's to accrue wealth. However, everything else in between is white noise. How do you typically work with those people and help them get a bit more clarity around what they want?
So look, sometimes people do come to me and they don't really know what their goals are. But once you actually ask the questions and really try to dig a bit deeper, people really do have a fair idea of what they're trying to achieve, because people really do generally want to be in a different place or a better place, you know, in the next 10, 20 years to where they are now. So I think that's really important to get that clarity. Sometimes people do come to me and they don't really have those goals. They say, oh, do I need a goal? Can't I just make as much money as possible right now? And that doesn't really work, because you need to have a reason to invest. Whether you're investing in property or investing in another type of vehicle, you need to actually have a reason to do it so they can formulate a strategy around it. So there's no point in just deciding you're going to, you know, build a duplex and make, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of money, or you're going to do a renovation, or you're going to buy a property in Sydney and hold it for 20 years for it to triple in value without having a goal in place, because it's like, why are you doing it? So you actually need to understand what you're trying to achieve. And that for me is really, really important. And I'll always try to, you know, get people to understand that and get people to clarify that before we can move forward.
One of the main pain points in my experience that a lot of people suffer from is that they get analysis paralysis. So it's quite frequent that you'll be having a conversation with somebody, like you mentioned, at a Sunday barbecue or over the course of your working week. And, you know, everybody has an opinion on property. Everybody's trying to predict the market. The truth being that nobody really knows what the market's going to do at any given time. Obviously, we rely very much on historical data and experience to form an opinion on what markets likely will do. How do you help people get off the fence and actually start taking action?
Again, comes down to goals and strategy. And I think it's really important. Yeah, people sometimes, they always think, is now the right time to invest, or should I wait till the market crashes and all that sort of thing? And market doesn't really crash, not in the good locations. So when people ask me when is the best time to invest, I always say the best time is now, or the best time is when you can afford to. It's not sitting around for 6 months trying to time the market, because trying to time the market doesn't actually work for you. Time in the market might work for you, but you've got to get into the market to do that. And yeah, there's other strategies that we obviously cover in the book and in this podcast series, including developments and renovations, where you can actually, you know, add value to your property to mitigate against any other sort of risks. But at the end of the day, if you understand the fundamentals of how the property markets work, then you know, you won't be so scared about, you know, jumping in and doing something. Because to be honest, the worst thing you can do is nothing.
Very good point. And to dig a bit deeper on that last statement, which I wholeheartedly agree with, you know, the worst thing to do is nothing. What are some of the opportunity costs of not investing, you know, waiting for a better market conditions, more supply, less buyers that you're in competition with. What are the drawbacks of going down that path?
Well, essentially, to put things in simple terms, if you were to buy a property and it doubles in value. So, for example, if you buy a property for $500,000 now and in 10 years' time it doubles in value and it's worth $1 million, you've made, you know, $500,000 there. If you don't do anything in that 10-year period, then you have not made that money. Now, if you put your money in the bank, we know that at the moment the interest rates are at an all-time low. So you're basically getting no money, no interest really from putting your money in the bank. And again, it comes down to the fact that if you, the worst thing you can do is absolutely nothing. So the opportunity cost is absolutely huge. You really need to get in there and give it a go because really doing nothing is just, it's actually costing you money because, you know, putting your money in a bank or a savings account or most other investments in terms of, you know, within the banking industry is really not going to serve any purpose for you.
How important is it, Lloyd, that people looking to invest, you know, look outside of their local area?
Yeah, so living, trying to invest where you live is a bit of a no-no, really. You should only invest where you live if that happens to be the best location in the country to invest. And for most people, it's not. You know, for one or two people, it might be, but most of the time, there's a better location elsewhere. Quite often, people want to invest close to where they live so they can check on the property, but that doesn't work either. Or people think that they know the area that they live in, so they should invest there. The reality is, people don't know the area they live in because I could ask just about anybody who lives in their particular suburb, you know, what's the growth rates of your suburb or what's the vacancy rates, and people wouldn't have a clue. But I can guarantee that when you do the due diligence on an area that you actually do invest in, you'll know more about that suburb than where you currently live and where people who actually live in that suburb you're investing in actually know it as well. So it's all about doing that due diligence and knowing that area. Remembering that when you invest in property, you have a property manager to look after your property. So you shouldn't be scared about investing interstate either because you don't need to be, you know, standing there to look at, you know, driving past and looking at your property or anything like that. So you actually need to actually understand how that works. You're running a business. You're going to have a property manager looking after your property there. At the end of the day, you need to diversify and everything and get away from where you live. And quite often it'll be cheaper to invest elsewhere anyway.
I think that's a great segue into one of the biggest benefits of working with a buyer's agent and Lloyd, for people that are listening, wanting to use your services and experience. And that's, not everybody is going to be able to invest necessarily in the same state that they're living in, or depending on their investment goals. Sometimes you do need to look further afield. So to align themselves with a buyer's agent that has a very intimate knowledge of the markets that the client's looking to buy in, that knows the vacancy rates, that knows the mix of owner occupiers to investors, all of these one percenters obviously will influence the potential for growth, the yields, and where that property will sit within somebody's portfolio. So I think, you know, there's probably been many times where you've been able to benefit from that experience you have of many geographical markets and work with people possibly from out of area or interstate and help them build wealth.
Yeah, that's correct, Alex. There's a few other things too. I mean, in terms of researching and working out the vacancy rates and the growth rates and everything else there, that's something that if people have the time to do it, they can do themselves. I mean, obviously a buyer's agent has access to a lot of data that, you know, a lot of professional paid data that people can't get access to. So that's one benefit. But the other benefit too is actually pounding the pavements. So as a buyer's agent, we actually go and walk up and down the street. So, you know, we sort of do a bit of reconnaissance as well. So, you know, if I'm looking at a property for a client, I'll visit it at different times of the day. I'll want to make sure, you know, I look to which way the sun is coming in, and I want to investigate to see if there's any noisy neighbours there. I want to make sure that there's no one, you know, that's got a drug lab or, you know, next door, you know, those sort of things. They're the sort of important things that if you're investing away from where you live, then you really need to get someone who knows that area, who can actually access that area. And the other thing also is one of the things I do is I might drop into the local police station, I drop into council, I drop into the local corner store, ask questions about the neighborhood. And that's what I recommend people to do anyway when they're investing. So it's a lot more than just looking at data that's available. It's about really knowing the area, you know, pounding the pavements, getting to actually know, is this the area that I should be investing in? Is this a good street and all that kind of stuff?
It's great advice. And a lot of those core concepts you cover off on in your chapter in the book on buying like a buyer's agent.
Absolutely.
Another segment of the market that benefits greatly from your business and your services, Lloyd, are expatriates. Do you work with expats?
I do indeed. I've got clients in Singapore, Hong Kong, UK, UAE, and America.
And what are they typically looking for from your service?
Typically, they're really looking for me to manage their property portfolio. And by that, I don't mean from a property management point of view. So I don't physically manage each property, but I'm managing building up their portfolio. A lot of those clients never actually see the properties that they're buying. So they have a lot of trust and faith in what we're doing, but we're building up their portfolio. So a lot of those clients actually do duplex builds where they're making some good equity, and then they go into another project and so on, building up the portfolios. Quite often they're on quite good incomes where they're working overseas, but they're wanting to invest their money back in Australia.
So without discriminating too much, would you say the majority of those expats will generally be high income earners that are looking to invest in their own backyard? Or do you find that there are also some expats which for various reasons are just abroad and understand that Australia's always been a really safe place to put their money?
I think it's both. I think it's both actually, yeah.
And what typically differs between the two sort of profiles in terms of if you're working with somebody abroad that, you know, they just want a nest egg or a couple nest eggs in Sydney or Melbourne or anywhere in the country, does the strategy change compared to, you know, the high net worth individual that possibly has more capital to inject into building a portfolio?
The only thing that really changes between people who've got a little bit more money is just the type of strategy. So people with a bit more money tend to do some more developments and stuff because, you know, we do a lot of duplex developments for people. But even people who are starting off with lower capital and build that capital end up doing duplex developments as part of their portfolio at some stage anyway because they can be so lucrative. So they do a bit of both. But, yeah, those with a bit more capital just tend to want to try to, you know, make some substantial profits there.
Lloyd, for anybody listening today that wants to learn more about your services or your business, where can they find your details?
So the website is ausproperty-professionals.com.au and the phone number is 1-800-146-837.
Excellent. Thanks so much for your time today, Lloyd.
No problem. Thanks, Alex.
Look forward to the next episode. So there you have it. We can see from this episode why it's so important to have a buyer's agent representing you and part of your dream team. Lloyd Edge brings strategy as a buyer's agent, but also experience from developing and building his own property portfolio. In Lloyd's book, Positively Geared, he digs really deep into these concepts and discusses the importance of the buyer's agent's role as part of the dream team. I strongly recommend you purchase a copy of Lloyd's new book, Positively Geared, so that you can pave your path to financial freedom. In the final episode of this series, Lloyd Edge discusses duplex development and the importance they've played in helping him build his property portfolio. Lloyd discusses all the aspects of duplex development from a novice to advanced perspective. Duplex development has allowed Lloyd Edge to build his property portfolio and advocates that it helps you achieve superior yields and a great way to unlock equity in a home overnight. Join us for our final episode on duplex development in this series.